massive statue of the 16th president honor a victorious war that kept the nation together. In its sorrowful elegance, the wall bears witness to the tragedy of a lost war that tore it apart. But the Jefferson Memorial seems to transcend thoughts of bloodshed in any cause, whether noble or misguided. In the quotations that crowd its walls, the third president declares that institutions must advance to keep pace with the times, defends the freedom to worship any religion or none at all, and preaches the equality of mankind, while briefly condemning the despotism of slavery. Unmentioned is the fact that the writer owned hundreds of black people whose labors turned his hilltop estate in central Virginia into a marvel of architectural and agricultural innovation. Jefferson's words, etched in stone, encourage visitors to be inspired by an apostle of freedom. His legacy, wrote the historian Richard Hofstadter, was not limited to the realm of economics or politics, or even a political party. It was an imperishable faith expressed in imperishable rhetoric. Nowhere in the Jefferson Memorial is there any hint that it was conceived and financed by members of the party that dominated every elected branch of the federal government from 1933 until the onset of the Cold War almost 15 years later. A House Democrat chaired the committee that planned it. A Democratic Congress appropriated the $3 million to construct it, the equivalent of roughly $55 million today. And a Democratic president spoke at all three stages of the process of building it: the groundbreaking, the laying of the cornerstone, and the final dedication. Such favoritism struck few people as odd at the time. After all, the Lincoln Memorial had been planned and built under Republican administrations. And for decades, Democratic politicians and journalists had routinely referred to the master of Monticello as the founder of their party. Democrats from every region and ideological persuasion quoted Jefferson in their speeches and named their magazines and annual fundraising dinners for him. Later, those occasions honored Andrew Jackson, too. Although the populist-talking William Jennings Bryan won three Democratic nominations for president, conservatives in his party never ceased to loathe him. Yet, they would not have dared to disagree with Bryan's statement in 1912 that Jefferson's motto of equal rights to all and privileges to none is the fundamental law that governs legislation and the administration of government. One could quarrel over how to interpret the Messiah's creed. Only an infidel would deny its eternal truth. But the Democrats' abiding veneration of Jefferson required them to believe in two myths about his political views that turned a figure limited by the beliefs of his time into an icon for all ages. Jefferson did not, in fact, create the mass, fiercely competitive party that figures from Jackson to Bryan to FDR to Obama would lead. Neither was the slave-owning grandee the apostle of individual freedom and mass democracy that the selected, albeit inspirational, words inside his memorial suggest. Like all the eminent, mostly well-born figures who steered the public affairs of the new American nation, Thomas Jefferson actually detested competitive political parties and mistrusted anyone who sought to create them. Two opposing groups of notable citizens did arise from the sharp debates he and James Madison had with Alexander Hamilton during the mid-1790s over such issues as the need for a central bank and whether to sympathize with or oppose the revolution in France. But these were factions composed of men who made or hoped to make government policy. They were not the kind of parties that would become familiar to Americans in the middle of the 19th century and that, for all their flaws, continue to thrive today. The followers of Hamilton dubbed themselves Federalists. Jefferson's allies adopted the name Democratic Republicans, which they usually shortened to Republicans. But neither band favored a political order shaped by permanent organizations that would contest election after election for every office from alderman to president. "Men who have been intimate all their lives crossed the streets to avoid meeting," reported Jefferson from Philadelphia in 1797. "They turned their heads another way, lest they should be obliged to touch their hats." He looked forward to a restoration of